Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today is a really, really fun interview with a gentleman by the name of Elton Mayfield. Elton and I have come across each other, gosh, in years past. He has done a lot of work with the BMA. He was an officer and a VP of chapter development for the BMA, which has since merged with the ANA, the Advertising Association of America. And he's also the co-founder of ER Marketing, which he's been doing for about 17 years. It serves B2B, and he is a well-known speaker across the country around B2B work and has some really remarkable insights into how the buyer has changed and how we all have to connect in a very different way. I think it is right up our alley, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Today's podcast is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. If they ain't biting, catch them with content. So guys, without further ado, give a listen to my conversation with my good friend, Elton Mayfield. Elton.
Mark.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
How are things in the beautiful Midwest?
Well, I think we're going to finally see the spring. So we had snow this weekend in Kansas City, and it's supposed to be 80 on Thursday.
Really?
So, yes. I don't know why everyone is sick.
Well, the changing of the weather, you know, that happens. People go out with, you know, the first sign of warmth, people go outside and... you know, it just, we're not used to it. And then it gets cold. And for us in the South, it is the pollen. The pollen right now is unbelievable. I mean, there's no reason to even wash your car because it's everything, every car is green. And but it's getting pretty. I mean, it's getting really nice. So,
yeah,
cool. What's new? So how's, how's the world at ER Marketing?
Things are good. We are super busy, so that's good. A lot of activity. Seems like there is just a tremendous amount of activity across all accounts and clients and businesses right now. So people are continuing to gear up and invest in marketing and with the constant change of communication and how people communicate and how people consume information. It's just, it's ever changing. Everyone's trying to at least maybe not stay ahead, but at least stay with it.
Yeah. So. Why do you think, it's so busy?
Well, I think it's difficult for everyone in marketing, B2B, B2C, there are so many options and ways to communicate today. Like last night I was having a conversation with someone through Instagram, had another conversation through email. There's text message, direct through Messenger on Facebook. It's just endless. And that's my direct communication, let alone the messages that are being thrown at me through, television or radio. So it's just, it's nonstop. It's nonstop.
Yeah. Does it feed a level of, insincerity, do you think? I worry about that we're there's so much stuff that we become numb to it, and you and I were out at, in fact, you and I were at that thing in Boulder together, and I remember somebody, one of the speakers said, yeah, I've got 6,000 unopened emails,
right?
And I was one. I mean, so do you think that there's just this constant barrage that makes it really difficult to connect on a sincere level?
I think so. I think it's hard as the communicator of a message because you have to put it out there in basically almost every format because your audience wants to receive it at different times in different ways. But as a brand trying to communicate with a customer, it's very, can be very challenging, I think, because it is, it's overwhelming. I think marketers have a tendency to be somewhat jaded to messaging and a little skeptical anyway. And mm-hmm. so then when you have 6,000 unread messages in somebody's inbox and, you know, you've got 27 on, you know, messages on Twitter and you've got Instagram messaging and it's just on and on and on. I think it does. I think we run the risk of alienating our audience because we've just overwhelmed them with so many messages that they're like, I can't even get through it. And yeah, I've heard it before. And it just, it does. I think we lose a sense of sincerity. I think it's important to keep that human factor whenever we can. With all of these things, we try to automate and get efficient, and then we take the human factor out and we forget to just be real people.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately that's what we're still doing business with. And certainly on the B2B side, it's, you know, it's very much a person to person because you're making a big decision that, you know, impacts your business or your job, or, you know, this isn't a matter of I'm going to order, you know, one pizza brand or another for dinner. And if I make a mistake, okay, my kids may not like it, but you know, nobody's really going to lose their job here. But in B2B world, you make the wrong decision. In some cases, these are, you know, these are always important, but some are very significant. You make the wrong decision, you need to know, you know, that it's not going to put you or your company or whatever at risk. And you know, I think the decision is just more impactful there. And so people think about it, but they want to know. We talk about this with clients that are manufacturers and they sell through, you know, almost everything sells through some sort of a sales channel or distribution channel of some sort. And we do a lot in home improvement and construction. And at the end of the day, these big brands spend this money building a brand. But at the end of the day, it's that person who's at the kitchen table, if you will, sitting across from you talking about your home that is delivering the brand. And that's your guy or gal. And so that's the person that you're doing the business with. It's not the big brand per se. And so,
right.
You know, I think we get lost in that sometimes and look at, you know, numbers only. And that's, you know, it's a very real issue, I think, for brands and companies to remember that it is people that we're talking to.
Yeah. You know, that's fascinating because I've, you know, we've talked a lot about that, and I've tried to tell a great number of people what you just said. And I think there's some real variables, especially like an industry like ours that has always relied on a commission-based salesperson to walk in the door. And you said a lot there in terms of, you know, obviously first, there's so much noise coming at us in so many different ways that we get a little numb and we can discard stuff in the blink of an eye. However, because you're buying for what you said is essentially livelihood and a big decision, you're now not going to necessarily make that purchase by yourself. And because you're, you know, it's your neck on the line, so to speak. So you're looking for someone who is a partner in crime or, you know, unfortunately, this sounds pretty negative, but if you need someone involved, because if things go bad, you need somebody to blame. And right. I mean, because
yeah.
And,
right.
And so even though everything in our personal lives is pushing us to purchases or transactions without any people involved, we do a lot of this, the recon and research by ourselves in the B2B world. And then we actually invite the people in, and it's in, and you have already done our work. And so now we're inviting them. So there's a couple variables. We've got all this noise. We've got this need for someone to be a partner with us or someone to take some of the pressure off. But then there's the third piece here is, you know, we have all the tools at our disposal to keep people at bay. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, I feel like it's so odd, and I don't know if you know, you've been so involved with the BMA over the years, and you've got an agency that serves this, and so I'm sure you wake up thinking about this. But for me, I think, gosh, you've got all this stuff coming at us, that numbs us. You've got definitely a need for human interaction, yet it's so hard to connect on a personal level because of all that stuff coming at us and all the tools at our disposal. Isn't it a weird, you know, it's a weird environment we're operating in.
Right. Oh, I think you're right at it. When you look at numbers, you know, I'm like, well, we send our newsletter goes to 1,000 people and we have thousands of followers on social media and you have all these connections in LinkedIn, and then you're like, okay, who have I actually talked to today?
Yeah.
You know, human to human, who have I spoken with?
Right.
And so I think that's why, you know, for us, we still see, you know, a tremendous value in trade shows, conferences, events, because it does remind us all, yes, we're all here and we're spending this money to be here, but it also gives us a time to, you know, have a conversation as you and I did. It's, you know, we're in line to get lunch.
Right.
Just like people do every day at work, but you know, we're have a conversation and connect and put the pieces together of, you know, not through LinkedIn that we're too, you know, LinkedIn's great to tell you that, but you know, we put it together face to face. We're not going to forget that.
Yeah.
And versus, oh, you know, so-and-so, well, can you introduce me? And yeah, I get an e-introduction. And so again, and that's a component. It is a balance. You have to do both.
Yeah.
You know, you have to use all those tools in today's world. And it's an inherent challenge, I think, of all that we all face today. You know, I don't, you know, as generations of people come up into the workforce, they're, you know, the digital native and all that type of phrase. But, you know, I also, you know, we also remind people that, you know, pick up the phone and call the client. It's real easy to send an email. It's real easy to do these other things, but pick up the phone, talk to them, because an email can be, or any written form, but certainly an email can come off completely different than how it was meant. And it's left for, you know, it's a book. It's left for you to interpret how you want to feel about it, as opposed to talking to someone and understanding what they meant.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of misinterpretations of emails have occurred through the years. Because you're leaving it to someone else to, you know, understand it, as opposed to let's have a conversation and resolve it in 5 minutes, as opposed to let's guess what that means, try to solve what we think it means, and then find out we're completely wrong.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and it's interesting that you talk about events, and I know you guys do get involved in that for clients. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I've thought about this, and there's a ton of events out there. And even when I go to some of, you know, in our industry, we've got some big events, and some of them are struggling. Some of them have died off. You know, new ones crop up as like the new saving grace. And, you know, and I've done one that's been a really kind of smaller, intimate deal. And I wonder, in this day and age, when people are so busy, or at least think they're really busy, working on, you know, chasing their emails and working in the business, what prompts them to get out and actually go and spend money? Especially when you can YouTube a lot of the speakers and that kind of stuff. I wonder, is it what you were saying? It's that we're no matter what, we still crave a little human interaction?
I think that's part of it. You know, I think of that, you know, I've got my youngest kids are 12. They're finishing up seventh grade. So they're, you know, 5 years away from college. And, you know, I look at, you know, the evolution of secondary education, and in 5 years, is it even necessary to go to college from an education standpoint? I mean, I can, on iTunes and different platforms, I can get the education part I need. Now I've got to go to pay to get the degree per se, but you know, I can get a lot of education online.
Sure.
From, you know, I want computer science professors at Stanford. I can see their classes through, you know, online. I don't have a degree from it, but I can get that education component. So what else is there? Well, there's a, you know, what do we get from college too. I mean, that's a transitional point in our lives. It's the human interaction, the networking, probably weren't networking as we thought about it when we were 18, 19, 20, but you're meeting people and human interaction and you're evolving as a person. You're out on your own. And, you know, in many ways we don't need that. I mean, you wouldn't have to go do that. You can get an online degree. Same way I look at a trade show or a conference, you know, I can get that speaker. I can hear, there's a lot of great marketing speakers and just regular speakers too, but you know, you can watch a video of it and it's okay. Watching it live is completely different. It's like, you know, listening to an album or there's my age album, listening to music and then going to a live show. A live show is always better. Mm-hmm. For any musician at all. I mean, you go see them live and you're like, wow, that was incredible. But at a conference, you also interact with people and you have a conversation about the topic that was just there and it's very relevant. And, you know, even if it's a focused small conference like the one we were at, you have conversations about that topic. And so you dig a little deeper, you make some human contacts as opposed to, I can consume it, but I don't know that it didn't stick with me necessarily. And that's partly maybe how I want to learn too. Some people can watch a YouTube video and it's fine. I think that's, you know, our kids' generations or, you know, those 12 to 16 year olds, they learn everything on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't need human interaction, but that also scares me because they lack a huge skill set that is required. It's still required. I don't think it'll go away. We still do trade shows, we do events, we do, you know, those type of things are as valuable for human interaction and conversation than they are just to hear a speaker or, you know, see a new product. Mm-hmm. It's the interaction, it's the engagement that can occur at a live face-to-face thing, whether it's a luncheon with 30 people or a conference with 3,000, there's still something happening. There's an energy that occurs. So I don't know. I see it for sure. There's a value of the human interaction part there. I think it's also just something that it's not given as much importance anymore. So people don't use it as much and they don't see it as much until they go to a lunch and go, wow, that was really interesting. Had some great conversations, met this neat person. I mean, I could rifle off, you know, employees I've hired because I sat next to them at a lunch and had a conversation. And 2 years later, they ended up coming to work here, or clients that, you know, we met, or, you know, I mean, it's never, you know, as simple as just, I'm going to go meet my next, you know, client, employee, whatever, at this show. But at least what I found anyway, it's more of the natural human interaction that occurs and relationships are built that way.
Right, right. Well, it's funny because you and I have the same age kids and I, you know, there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of talk about Gen Z and I'm not, you know, innocent in that. I've talked about it, written about it. We've got magazines that even target that in the higher education segment. And it's fascinating the learnings that I've seen, not only from my real world experience with Generation Z, and they are our kids. And I think our generation didn't necessarily grow up with technology. I mean, we had, but we it was born with us, you know, and so we, like you said, it's funny, you said an album. I was talking to somebody the other day about rock bands and how it used to be like, if you went, somebody saw Led Zeppelin when we were young, you know, that was like, what? You saw, no way. What was that like? There was a mystery there. There was something mm-hmm. to be said and they became iconic rock bands, not just because their music was excellent, but because they, you know, there was a mystery to them. Today, you know, you got a bunch of one-hit wonders. They can throw something out and everybody hears it and, you know, we're on to the next thing the next day. So that variable is not just present with generations. It's everywhere. And I'm hopeful that there's a bit of a backlash that we're getting back to this, hey, I'm craving some real content and some real connection. And, you know, I liken it to the commercial where the kid is, his father takes him out in the truck, you know, and drives out there, and the kid won't look up from his device, and eventually looks up and sees the stars and all the stuff and kind of takes it in. Maybe collectively I'm hopeful that we're getting to a point where we're going to look up. But it also means that maybe engagements are more intimate, smaller. Maybe they take a little bit more time to nurture. You know, we went through a time when everything was just mass marketing, and you know, you can't really do that, and especially in the B2B segment, it still means something to connect, like you said, on a human level, right?
Right. Well, and we've got, you know, and career have gone through the, you know, traditional mass marketing approach, and you know, it's shotgun down to rifle, and you narrow in your effort, and you know, it's a one-on-one single approach, and we've gone through that. Now it's almost like we're scaling that because of technology. We can scale the one-on-one at a mass marketing level, mm-hmm. but we've taken the one-on-one out. Yes, we have some data, we have lots of data, so we can apply that, but we haven't really, you know, made the effort to, you know, personalize it in the sense of real, not just, you know, dear John, dear, you know, Mary, and thank you for X purchase, but, you know, what is my experience going to be, and can you tailor that to who I am and what I want? Mm-hmm. We're going through that with a new company that we're working with that is they went too far, I think, probably went that way where it's like, okay, we have all our, you know, personas, and it's like all these buzzwords, you know, we did our personas and we have the journey and we have all these things. And it's like, it became these, you know, buckets, if you will, that everybody fit in. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm an anomaly because, you know, I have 12-year-old twins and I've, you know, 26-year-old daughter too, who's married. So I also have a 2-year-old grandson. So where do I fit? I'm a grandfather, but I'm also a middle school dad. Mm-hmm. So where am I at? How do I qualify? Cause my numbers don't match up with your group.
Right.
I'm an early adopter. I'm a very much a tech person. I'm on social media. I understand this stuff. So that I don't match up to my neighbors.
Right.
So I don't look like them on paper, but yet, so who do, you know, and so it's more about really looking at, you know, the mindset of that person and communicating with them that way. And that to me is where we get into more of the personalization of, you know, like I like LinkedIn, I like Instagram. So, you know, you can communicate with me on Instagram. I like that. If it's in a way that I, you know, or I don't like whatever other communication platform, you know, I like getting, you know, I like my physical inbox on my desk because mm-hmm. it's like 5 things a day and I can go through it. I can take the time to look at each piece and understand it. So I can, okay, I get that. I know what that is and I understand it and I can make it, you know, I can tell you what I went through in my offline inbox, you know, to your earlier comment. I, you know, I don't have 6,000 unread. I stay ahead of them, but still, you know, there's 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 emails a month, mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How can I possibly, in reality, yeah, 3,500 is, yeah, I'm looking at multiple months now, 3,500 emails a month. That's impossible to think that I was engaged with it. That's 100 a day.
That's crazy.
No. How would I, you know, and that's not even our project systems and stuff. That's actual emails directed towards me.
Right.
Okay. That's not, you know, that's being on too many email lists and too many group conversations or something, but that's, you know, that's not, I couldn't tell you of those 100 a day what I, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I got.
Right.
You know,
right.
My at this point in my life, my I always say my plate's already been full too long, so something's got to fall off for this to stay on. So
right.
It's got to be pretty important.
And well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to come back to that. I want to talk to you a little bit about that inbox, both physical and email. Before I do that, let me get the listeners a little picture into who you are. Give us, now, were you born and raised in Kansas City?
Actually, lived here almost 30 years now.
Okay.
But grew up in small town, southeast part of Kansas.
All right.
So real close to Oklahoma. So small town, like less than 2,000 people.
KSU, went to KSU?
I did. I went to K-State.
So. Ooh, they had a nice run, didn't they?
They did. They did. It was kind of nice to watch them play later in the year. So
very cool. Very cool. What now? So tell me, but tell me about how we came to ER marketing, and give me a little of your perspective on, you know, because you were obviously a big part of the BMA, and give me a little of the history of both of those.
Well, ER started, we're coming up on 17 years. And my business partner Renee and I started it. We worked together on the client side. And, you know, as we said, we've, you know, hired and fired a lot of agencies and wanted to, you know, do it a little different. We're both on the account side, which is a little different. A lot of agencies start with a creative, typically, a writer, designer, somebody that can freelance. It's not as common to, you know, it's hard to start and, well, let me write a marketing plan for you. But we're more on the, you know, account strategic side for sure. Just had been through a lot of different things as a client, on the client side, we did national retail. She and I have been different places. We worked together before we started the agency. So we knew each other there for a national retailer. And so we had an idea of, you know, kind of what we wanted to do, and got started in the business. And that's really lent ourselves towards, you know, we have a kind of a focus in building materials, and then we also now we're growing out our ag division. So we always like to say we build brands that build and feed America.
Right.
But you know, those basic needs of life. You need home and you need food.
Yeah.
But so we're, you know, but it's in that B2B and then B2B2C. I think that's where we're seeing a lot of that shift, you know, through the years. That really got us into. Got involved with BMA because we did predominantly B2B work. And so it's really the only group out there. Kansas City has a tremendous ad club. Here we have the IABC's, you know, International Chapter of the Year multiple times is here. We've got a lot of associations here. But one that really focused, you know, at least that interaction with people that, you know, when you went to a luncheon or an event, people understood, you know, multi-step distribution or channel marketing or, you know, what B2B was, and, you know, and it wasn't just, you know, selling pizzas or Twinkies or something on a consumer level. And again, we've done that in our life too. It's just, that's a different model than, you know, making a business marketing case. And so was drawn in towards it, got involved at the local level, and then got involved on national level and got to work with a lot of the chapters and, you know, just get to meet, you know, honestly, it's people, you know, in talking with chapters and people in the BMA through the years, you know, the proverbial question would come up about, you know, what do I get for my dues and what's, you know, is it worth this or that? And, you know, I always use the example of, you know, if the dues are, I use simple math here of an even number like $300. Mm-hmm. $300 is a lot of money. I get that. But at the end of the day, you know, you're trying to put, you know, an ROI, I can give you savings or you got a discount here, you got this thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, for me anyway, I put into the organization a lot because of the relationships I got out of it. I got to meet some tremendously talented, smart people at other agency owners, clients. But on the client side, you know, didn't go into it trying to meet people to become clients. Mm-hmm. We've had people come to us because I met them there, but I didn't, you know, I was in the organization, in the community. I wasn't there, you know, hey, you could be a client. Let me talk to you. But be part of the organization, be part of the community, but just have conversations. And, you know, to ROI $300, I was like, I can give you savings to get to that. But, you know, how do you put a price on those relationships? And
sure.
I said, that's the long-term value for me has always been the people that, you know, you meet at a conference, you meet at a luncheon, you meet at a chapter meeting, you know, that's the most valuable part to me. And, you know, some people will pay you back tenfold for your dues, and other people, honestly, you know, they won't, but they're still a component of the community and people that you know, and you're going to have good conversations and ideas come out of it and sounding boards and, you know, things like that. And so I was, you know, I loved being part of it. You know, it's evolved to its next phase with the merger with ANA. And, you know, I think it has a lot of opportunity with that. I mean, it's still to be determined on how it, you know, any mergers and group, you know, when you combine, you know, cultures and groups together, it's always a bit of a challenge. And I think, you know, we've had some of those certainly, but There's a network of chapters and people that are interested in, you know, the B2B market, but also, you know, the big evolution we've seen is this idea that B2B is really evolving into, you know, is very similar to B2C in the sense of it doesn't have to be, you know, I say it doesn't have to be boring to boring. You know, B2B buyers are still humans. They're still people. They're still consumers. They're still on social media. They're still doing things like a B2C buyer is. But so we can be more creative. We can be more, we can push the envelope a little bit more. People are open to that as opposed to this quote unquote boring idea that B2B is. So
right.
I think we've seen a lot of that as it's merged through the years and people have started to realize, wait a minute, that's okay. We can actually talk like people, even if we are a, you know, a big company.
Right. Right. So. Well, it's really interesting. And I'm glad I asked because I think that's a great lesson for everybody in terms of, you know, the BMA. I mean, there are a lot of people who, you know, we have this just that we're dominated by this immediate gratification ROI world. And there's someone in the corner office and it's all pressure and it's all built up. And it's like, you know, if I do this, what am I going to get for it? And, you know, I you probably are a little bit like me. Certainly the data helps, but at the end of the day, you know, if we knew we could spend X and get Y and that return was juicy, then we'd all go to Vegas. You know, we'd all just say, oh, this is perfect. There's no guarantees. And what you were saying is, it's a great analogy. Like I go to the BMA events, I'm not there to sell. I mean, I'm there for other reasons that nurture and build relationships and community. And all out of the blue stuff comes up because I've become part of that world. I've invested of myself to say, it's a bigger picture in terms of, look, I'm getting involved. I'm part of this world. And because I've invested in the rising tide, all boats, you know, raising all boats, I know stuff will come back to me, I suppose, but I'm not there necessarily for that reason. And I think that's kind of the world we're in. I think that we're in a no BS world. I think people can smell it a mile away. They can smell the hard sell coming a mile away. They can smell it even if you're not in the room with them. And so that means that that's why I'm saying maybe there's a backlash. Maybe there's a time when we're starting to look up. Maybe there's a time where we're in a time where sincerity matters. Look, we all know, look, we all need to make money. We all need to run a business, but trust starts from a very different place than, you know, just trying to get the short-term sale. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We've, you know, that's the, I think you were spot on when you said our immediate, you know, we live in this instant always on world that, you know, overnight, I can remember when overnight was a big deal and now overnight's not fast enough. So we got to get same day yeah. from Amazon. And I'm like, you know, at some point we'll have the Jetsons where it's like, you know, I want that. And it just appears on my desk, I guess. I don't know how much faster we can get. There's just, you know, time is, there's some physical properties to it. We can't speed it up, but we seem to be just wanting it. You know, it's instant. You know, I use that in presentations that we live in this always on instant world where Amazon has to deliver it same day. And, you know, I'm married, but we date with, you know, the folks in our office, you know, they date with Tinder. You know, it's like you make a decision about someone that you want to go out with, like literally a picture and you swipe left. And it's like, that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to swipe left. I'm going to swipe right. And that's a swipe right. I'm going to make my decision. That's, you know, arguably an important decision to at least think about, but nope, we're just going to do it that quick. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we've lost some sense of, you know, effort that we have to actually put in.
Yep.
And, you know, that the relationship thing is just, you know, I do think it's part of it. You know, I would say there's, you know, if you think about your like three longest friends you've had, they're high school or college friends and they've been friends for a long time. If you've my age and you think about them, you know, there's three of them and one is, you know, he's always there to help you. And then the other one, you kind of give and take a lot. And you probably have a third that is just honestly, it makes no sense to continue being his friend. And but because he just always needs help. He's always the guy that calls, that like he's always not asking for help, but you just always have to help him.
Mm-hmm.
He just needs something all the time. And it's like from an ROI standpoint, there's no way you would justify the time versus return. But at the end of the day, there's no way you're getting rid of him because he's part of your life and he's part of your friendship circle. And it's, you know, it's just what you do. And it's, you know, it's like that, you know, you can't ROI relationships because
right.
most of the time you wouldn't continue them. I mean, most relationships don't add to your life as much as you want. I mean, it sounds cold or weird to say, but I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, dude, people want stuff from you. Well, that's life. I mean, and you want stuff from them, but you don't see that as your outbound. So, I mean, people want this, like, well, I did this. I went to a lunch. Where's my return? And I did, you know, I spent $35 and I did this. And, well, these things take time and you have to build, you know, I think that's the flip side of building a following or a transparency in some of these new, you know, digital tools and social media is building transparency and building a genuine, you know, interest in people and trying to, you know, engage with them on a real basis, not just a bot that responds, but, you know, actually take the time to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and reach out to people and, okay, so you don't call everybody you need to, but genuinely reach out to people and say, hey, how are you doing? What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and we don't, you know, we have all these tools. It's not like it's hard to reach out to five people you haven't talked to in 6 months.
Yeah.
You're probably connected with them on Facebook or an email or LinkedIn or something and just say, how are you doing? And that's helpful. I think it gives more back to you than it does even to them in many ways.
Well, I agree. And I'm of the mindset. I mean, I do a lot of that work, soul searching stuff and, you know, it's a bigger deal. It's a bigger picture in terms of what's enriching. And you're so right. This immediacy, it doesn't matter. You know, the things that we buy or need immediately, you know, good things come to those who wait. So I think that's really good. Your quote from this, by the way, is going to be, you can't ROI relationships. I wrote that down. That's pretty good. I've taken up a lot of your time, but let me ask you this. If you had some, we'll leave on this, your advice, you know, we have a readership that is what I call marketing service providers. They are predominantly print oriented, but as you know, those businesses are evolving like crazy. Not only the way that they put ink on paper, but some of the stuff they do from fulfillment to ad specialty to even design. And so, mm-hmm. But as we've talked, and you've made some remarkable points about the buyers today and where we're at, what's your advice to this group in terms of how they connect and where print's role is and all that kind of stuff?
You know, the companies that we've worked with, especially in that space, that have, you know, they've evolved their product offering. I think the big thing that, I guess, I don't know, advice, but that sounds, you know, that makes me feel even older than I already am by handing out, you know, I'm the wise old owl in the corner. Is to really look at your team and help your team understand the changing landscape. You know, one of my oldest friends, longest friends, I guess. I mean, like, I have no memory of not being a friend with this guy. We met, you know, our parents were friends in this little town. And so, but he's been a print sales rep his entire life. And a classic cliche print sales guy. He did a lot of big web stuff. And so that's what he did. Well, FSIs, I did a lot of FSIs in my life, the inserts in the paper. And so, but you know, that's evolved. People don't do that anymore. People don't get the paper. They don't get the FSIs as much. I mean, there's still grocery day, but so again, everything's changed. He's had to reinvent himself and, you know, people get used to, you know, and we see it with other clients where they're used to selling one product and you have to evolve to selling something a little more complicated. And, you know, get your team engaged in the fact that there's still a lot of print out there to the people use. We use print all the time. I'm a big fan of direct mail and email both, but I mean, you know, email's cheap, so we overuse it and killed it. Now it has no value. But direct has a place and print has a place. And so, you know, my advice, I guess, would be to really look at how's your company evolving? Are you truly just putting ink on paper still? Are you bringing solutions? Are you integrating digital with print? Because the two go together. Mm-hmm. You have data when you print a direct mail piece. How do you use that? Can you do email with that? Can you be more creative in the print pieces? You know, bring solutions to your customers, not just, do you have any printing that you need? Well, when I think printing, that limits you, I guess. And so we've had to do that with our, you know, as an agency, we can't, you know, we don't just do three or four things anymore. We do over half of the jobs I have in the agency now didn't exist like 7 years ago. We didn't have these people. I have a whole half of our office didn't exist like 7 years ago.
Right.
So that's the evolution of, you know, how does print, you know, how does it work with interactive? You know, can print drive to a website, and from the website, can they, you know, that's the, you know, I think is more of a, you know, more than just, you know, a printer or a print supplier or something, you know, is, you know, look for efficient ways to, or creative ways to integrate across just what people may think you do. When I've, the companies that, you know, and you and I have a mutual contact that works at one, and they've done a lot of work to evolve their company. So it's not just traditional printing, and there's, you know, some web, and there's digital and large format and inventorying of things and print on demand. And, you know, these are all just print things, but that's being innovative to me because it provides me solutions that I can offer to my clients beyond just here's a brochure.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And, you know, that's, I think the, you know, print's definitely not dead. And we talked about that at that conference, but I don't think it'll ever die. We see a resurgence. We bring it up all the time with people.
Yeah.
And it's always like, well, I can give you straight numbers. And that's the other thing is arm your team with real information about how print can work. Not from the print, the Printing Institute or whatever the governing body, PIA or whatever it is. Yeah, right. I know there's an association, but not from them, but real case studies. Here's a company that went to a trade show and they did a direct mail piece and they did an email. Here's how the direct mail piece performed. Here's who did it. I mean, that's like give people examples, not, well, I really like print. Isn't it nice when it feels okay? Yes. I'm not making a decision that way.
Right.
But I can tell clients it performs better. Okay. That's real information that helps me. So I can, you know, give me a case study, not just the cool print samples. You know, we're a printer. Here's all of our list of equipment. I don't care how much steel you own. I don't care if it's from Germany or Switzerland I don't care. I don't care. Honestly, I'm assuming that the ink and the paper is environmental, you know, I may, if I'm required to certify it, but I'm going to assume it all is because you're competitive. You have to be today.
Yeah.
And I don't want a big folder of all your print samples. Like, show me the really cool ones, but it's, you know, it's in postcards with a die cut. A lot of people can do that. That's not impressive.
Right.
I mean, that's like me saying, here's a brochure we did, and it's just a simple single sheet of paper. It's like, well, yeah, a lot of people can do that.
Yeah.
So,
well, it goes back to that intimacy and you're exactly right. And using that data to support, that sincerity, if you will. And I think you're spot on. And I think that's why our industry has a remarkable opportunity that feeds kind of a lot of what you were saying in this day and age where, you know, you're talking about connecting and, you know, more connecting live, you know, we do that. And print is a touchy-feely, sure, that does matter. But using stats and name-dropping to support that is also a really good thing because you can't just, you know, we can't go the other way and say, you know, there's just too much information and you can't use any of it. No, I think, you know, we're saying, no, you want it to be used to support everything that you were saying because ultimately it's about building that trust and that relationship. And as you say, and I'm going to quote you on, you can't ROI relationships, which has been great. So, you know, Elton, this has been awesome. And I'm so grateful that, you know, we reconnected and I'm hopeful that we can continue connecting going forward. Cause, I think this, you know, our readership is going to love this because it's dead nuts on in terms of what they're battling through, but also gives them the hope. You know, it seems like a messy place right now, but how they operate and what they do is all about sincerity, and it sounds like you are too. So mm-hmm. I just can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this.
No problem. Glad to do it, and let's definitely stay in touch. If there's anything you need, just let me know.
You got it. And I'll be there. Okay. And when I come that way, we'll step away and we'll go carve some time together.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right, Elton. Be well.
All right. You too.
See ya.
Bye.
Take care. Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Elton Mayfield. He's a good friend and someone I really admire. I think you will agree that he had a lot of good stuff to share with us regarding the B2B buyer, how trust is really critical, and how relationships matter probably more today than ever before. I think if you take one thing away, you've got to remember his quote, which is, you can't ROI relationships. And quite honestly, that's where we're at. It takes hard work. It takes diligence. But the reality is they can smell insincerity and the hard sell from a mile away. And honestly, we're in a day and age where we have to be diligent in our work for the right reasons. We have to do the stuff that supports others. We have to work hard for others. Doesn't mean that we can't make a buck, but we definitely have to be sincere in our approach. And I just cannot thank Elton enough for taking the time and sharing some of that insight with us. So I really, really hope you enjoyed this episode of Brushstrokes. It's a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine, and this episode was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Remember, if they ain't biting, catch them with content. Guys, it's been great. I hope you really enjoyed it. And until next time, be the buffalo. Take care.